I'm Jason, and I'm an alcoholic, and these are the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there's but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. Six, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Eight, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and film, and Facebook. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Now, it is my privilege to introduce our speaker, Mike W., who joins us from Vancouver, BC. He will share his experience, strength, and hope with us this evening.
Hi, everybody. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. It's such an honor and a privilege to be here. Before we get going, where's our webmaster? There's the online people. Is everything okay online? We got a thumbs up? Okay. It is such an honor and a privilege to be here. The first thing I want to do is I want to say thank you again to Margot and all of the committee people. These things don't just fall together by themselves. A big round of applause for all the committee members. Your tireless efforts have not gone unnoticed, and I realize that these are very, very extraordinary circumstances. And I want to honor that. I want to honor the circumstances that we are presently experiencing worldwide. It's a warm place in my heart to be here in a large setting like this, because we haven't been able to do this for about 2 years. It's been challenging in those 2 years for a lot of people. And I'm standing on this stage on the shoulders of giants. Absolute giants in sobriety have elevated me and propelled me and guided me along. And we've lost some of those giants over this pandemic. And I want to honor that. I want to honor any loss that's happened over this pandemic. And I know that we've all in our own way have experienced those losses. But if you're especially being, you know, hit with that, I just want to honor that we've experienced loss. And I want to share what I know my sponsor, Milton, is sharing from the big meeting in the sky. He would want me to be happy, joyous, and free. He would want me to lead a life that's rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. He would want me to go on. He would want me to enjoy and be of maximum service to others. That's what he would want for me, and I just want to share that. Yes, it's hard, but we are going to get through. I want to thank the committee for keeping us safe, disinfected, deodorized, socially distanced, maxed up. I want to thank him for all the speaker over here coming from the speaker over there, moving us around, getting the tapas on, all of it. All of it. All of it. Because we can't do that when we're drinking. But when we're sober, there's nothing we can't do. There's nothing we can't do. My sobriety date is June 14th, 92. I am in my 30th year of sobriety. That's a testament to the grace of God, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, sponsorship and meetings just like this. My home group, I have two home groups. Imagine that, a conflicted alcoholic. They're on the same night at the same time. Right? Port Moody Sunday is one of my home groups. Sunday night, 8 o'clock. My service position in that group is, you're not going to believe this, signing officer and alternate treasurer. They trust me with the money. You know, that's not part of my story. We'll get into that in a minute. But my other home group, of course, is the Steveston group. And there's a lot of people from both of those groups who were planning to be here but couldn't be here tonight. There's a lot of people that wanted to be here tonight but couldn't be here tonight. But they're here with us tonight in spirit. Because no matter where I go, I take you with me. That's my experience. And what we do here in Alcoholics Anonymous is that we impact people, and I've been impacted by you. And I take you with me everywhere I go. And I'll never be able to repay what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me. I am standing here as an overpaid alcoholic. An overpaid alcoholic. But before I get into that, I got to mention the people that are new. If you are new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. Welcome home. If you are new. If you are new. This room has been set up for you. The flowers, the banners, the sound system, so you can hear a message. The way I was raised in Alcoholics Anonymous, the new people are the most important person in the room. And it took a long time. I got a resentment when I was 30 days sober because I was no longer a newcomer. I was no longer the most important person in the room. I got a resentment. We'll get into that in a minute. But new people, we're here for you. We're here for you. New people, I owe you this. New people, you are 12 steps away from the most amazing life you can ever dream. New people. Now, if you're new here, I realize I only got your attention for about another 5 minutes, so we're going to stay on you for a minute, okay? New people. First off, if you're a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you sponsor or you are a sponsor, please raise your hand. Okay, new people, there's the people to talk to right there. Right? And if you've got a strong sponsor, like somebody mentioned this morning at the free workshop, you're not going to be able to run very much, but they're going to be delivering you a program of recovery that's outlined in our big book and further expanded upon in the 12x12. And I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for sponsorship. And that's because my insanity is so, so strong. And newcomers, I just want to tell you that there's nothing you've done that we haven't done. There's nothing you've felt that we haven't felt. And there's nothing that can't be overcome through grace, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, sponsorship, home group, step group, and all the stuff we do here to stay spiritually strong one day at a time. There's nothing that can't be overcome. My experience 30 years in, I've seen stuff. And I've seen people overcome that stuff. Through grace and the 12 steps, sponsorship, and all the things we do to stay spiritually strong. And I was the type of alcoholic who thought there was no way this would work for me. There's no way. I was beyond the beyond. And I used to get in big battles with my sponsor. He used to tell me, Mike, you were crazy long before you picked up a drink. Let's get into your childhood and what you were like. No, I was. You were crazy. You were selfish and self-centered. No, I wasn't selfish and self-centered to the extreme. And I want to tell you a little bit about what it was like when I was 7 years old. Phone rings, I answer it. Hello? The voice says, can I speak to your mom, please? I say, my mom can't come to the phone right now. She's speaking to the policeman. The voice says, well, can I speak to your dad, please? And I says, well, my dad's not here right. Can't come to the phone right now because he's speaking to the ambulance man. The voice says, okay, is there anybody else there? And I said, well, my uncle's here. But he's speaking to the fireman. And the voice says, wait a second, you've got police, fire, and ambulance going on? What in God's name is going on? And I said, they're looking for me. Selfish and self-centered to the extreme. I did not care about what you were experiencing. I once threatened to run away because I didn't get a cheeseburger for dinner. You know, like, I am that kid. You know, and all of this sort of progressed through my adolescence, right? Like, I remember the summer between grade 7 and 8, you know, that jump between high school, elementary school and the high school, and experimenting and wanting to be with the cool kids and wanting to drink. And that's what was cool. And I'm a biological child of an alcoholic. The pages were very much written for me. The moment I took that stuff into my system, right, it unleashed that. I know that today. I didn't know it at the time, but I know that today. And I was an adolescent, and I started to gravitate towards those people who were drinking and partying. And those were the cool people. I didn't want to be with the people that weren't drinking and weren't partying. And isn't it ironic, right? Like, you know, very conflicted. Even today, you know, I'll want to trust people I shouldn't trust. And I will trust people that I'm not, that in the most horrendous of situations, I'll trust people I shouldn't trust. And then I won't trust people I should. And all of you people scared me. Like, you were so grounded. You were so happy, joyous, and free. And I remember my adolescence just letting go of those people who wouldn't drink and wouldn't party. And I moved towards, you know, that whole lifestyle, getting into the rock and roll community. And just, you know, that's what happened. And I crossed that line at an early age, 14, 15. There was family trauma in my house. I had a father that wasn't there. And you know, that just accelerated my drinking. I ran away. I remember I was hanging out with adults at 14 years old, and there was one adult, you know, construction worker. He decided that he wanted to go visit his mom up in northern British Columbia. And so we were having a big party to celebrate him leaving, and he had a flight to catch, and I didn't want the party to end. 14 years old, and we started drinking, and I was a tall boy, so I could get into the bar. Got into the bar and started making our way to the airport. We stopped on another bar on the way to the airport, you know. And we got to the airport. We went to another bar at the airport. You know, okay, Mike, it's time to go. I'm going to get on my flight now at the airport. Oh, I wish this party wouldn't end. And long story short, I snuck on an airplane with this guy. I got through security. I got through, you know, everything. And I got on the airplane, and we flew on a commercial airline. I remember there was one stop on the way to the location, and I was watching the stewardess doing the count, the head count, and sort of going, checking the list and doing the head count. But I got away with it, right? Flew to Prince Rupert, BC. I don't know who would want to fly to Prince Rupert, but I was there. I flew to Prince Rupert, BC on a commercial airline for free. And when we got there, his mom greeted us at the airport, and she was a security officer for the airline. You know, it's just like, how do you make amends for that? It was Canadian Airlines at the time, and they're gone now. But, you know, I stayed in Prince Rupert. I was there for like 3-4 weeks. And then finally, you know, the money ran out, everything ran out. And I said, well, I better give a call home. And, you know, there was a missing persons report out for me, right? Like, it had been over a month. And I was 14. It didn't stop there. I took a Greyhound back from that. And somehow I manipulated myself back into high school. And I finished high school just by the bare minimum. I finished high school. Just barely made it through. And then I got a job as a bouncer in a rock bar in downtown Vancouver. And, you know, like, it was on, man. This was the rock bar. This was the scene, right? And I was 17 years old. I was underage IDing adults to come into the bar. And you want to talk about, no, you can't come in. That's not fake. You can come in, but it'll cost you 20, right? IDing adults as a minor, right? That doesn't do well with, like, reducing ego, right? Like, I was this minor doing that, and you know all what happened at the bar, right? We got introduced to that high-powered sedative that rhymes with propane, right? And I'm very grateful to that high-powered sedative that rhymes with propane, because it sped my bottom up, right? Like, only that stuff can do. And there I was, you know, 19. I had gotten a young girl pregnant, so there was a baby on the way, and And you know what happened, right? Like the drinking, and it just got progressive and more and more and more and more. And I drank that job away. You know, you can't show up. We can't have you here. You know, you're a mess, right? And the vacation pay was gone by the next weekend. You know how that works, right? There's no money. You know where it all went? It all went to drinking. And it was at that time that the criminal element got very attractive. And I don't want to be up at the podium here and indict myself, but because some of the statute of limitations here, I needed to find creative ways to keep drinking. And I thought some of the creative ways to do that would be to, say, come up with a whole bunch of addresses and names and forward that to the welfare department and see if I could get some rent checks. So, yeah, ooh is right. Ooh. I didn't think that at the time, but that's exactly what it was. And of course, you know where all that money went. It went to drinking, right? It was gone. And the young woman who had gotten pregnant was getting more pregnant each month. And you know, you've heard the saying, the inability to face life on life's terms, right? And I didn't have the ability to face that, right? And where I ended up was in a one-bedroom apartment with a couple who I'd met through drinking, and they had this beautiful little toddler. I'll never forget Jaden. He was about this, like, so beautiful, beautiful blue eyes. And while they weren't looking, I was eating the toddler's food out of the fridge, right? That's the kind of rock star I was. I remember my last drunk. I had drunken myself into absolute oblivion yet again, because I'm an upon awakening oblivion drinker. Get me out of here. I don't want to face it. I don't want to feel it. I can't go near any of that stuff. Get me out of here. You know, and it's a really scary place when alcohol won't turn on what I need it to turn on, and it won't turn off what I need it to turn off. Because what I'm left with is me on me. And I drank myself into oblivion yet again. And I staggered to the back of this apartment building, and I was in the alley. I'll never forget it. And I got that moment of clarity where I could see that if I didn't do something about my alcoholism, that it had me. I could see my life and anything and everything floating away from me, and I could feel the darkness and the end coming. I knew that it was coming for me, right? To kill me. And I was very suicidal at the time, too, because I had no way of solving any of what my life had become. And the family didn't want anything to do with me. They wanted me to get help. You know, unemployable, nothing. And I remember I passed out. I passed out in that alley, and somehow I came to, and I crawled back into that apartment onto the couch again. And I remember the next morning I got up, or I should say the next afternoon, I got up at the crack of noon the next day and rolled over onto the patio to look for some cigarette butts so I could get a cigarette in the morning. And there was Russ P. walking to the noon meeting at the North Shore Alano Club. And you could see it in his stride, the air that he breathed, right? His whole deportment, the energy, the aura around him, his eyes. And I remember Russ P. Him and I worked at that same bar together, and he went MIA. Like, where'd he go, right? What happened was he got sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so as Russ P. was walking by to the noon meeting, he looked at me and he said, "Whenever you're ready, Mike. Whenever you're ready. Whenever you're sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired of being sick and tired. We're ready for you." And, you know, like, Russ P. paved the way for me to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not die. He paved the way. He took me to my first meeting. He got me exposed right in the middle of AA. And you know what? I would love to tell you that I just came into AA and it was tra-la-la-la-la, everything was great. And I got into those 12 steps, and then after that I got into the traditions, and then after that I got into the concepts and the warranties, and I was ready for a service position, and I volunteered on a committee. I would love to tell you that what it was like. That's not what it was like. I came into AA and I got resentments, man. I got resentment. I sobered up in the new meeting at the North Shore Club, and I was 30 days sober, and this guy gave me resentment. He looked like Happy Dave over there, the guy, okay? You could tell he'd been hit by the happy stick, you know? Like he's been so... He was talking about how a higher power had done for him what he couldn't do for himself. He was marveling about the 12 steps, how inventory through the 12 steps and making amends had removed the blockages from him being of maximum service. Couldn't stand him. And one day he shared right at me. And it was on, man. It was on. Every time I was at share, no thanks, I'll pass. You know? Anyone wearing a pineapple shirt is clearly intellectually challenged and way too happy. You know, I would share Adam, right? And the old timers were noticing this, how this was crazy. I was getting more and more hostile, right? I'm like, and they approached me. The old timers cornered me after the meeting and said, hey, look, you got to stop acting like a lunatic. You've got to go and make amends to that man for what you've been thinking and how you've been acting. And I said, make amends? Like, I'm only 35 days sober. We don't care. Go make amends. So over I went. I don't know why I listened to those old timers, but over I went. And I said, Dave, the old timer, or those guys over there say I need to come talk to you. I'd like to apologize, make amends for just what's been going on here, and I'd like to, you know, for how I've been acting, and I'd like to make amends. And he looked at me and said, what was your name? Like, he didn't even know me. I was busy with this guy for like a week, and he didn't even know my name. And I'm like, well, and that's when I started to see that it's the disease of perception, right? Like, I don't see things as they are. Like, I've got my nose right up against a tree, and I can't see the forest around me. I need you. I need sponsorship because I can't see. I need old-timers because I can't see. And that got me through a couple months, and then these old-timers cornered me again. And I was 90 days sober. And these old-timers says, Mike, it's time for you to go down and straighten out all these addresses and rent checks and security deposits. You got to go straighten that out. Straighten that out, I said. Now, for those of you who've been involved in the justice system in Canada, it's fraud under 5,000 and fraud over 5,000. Dems the rules in Canada. For those of you who are my American friends, we've got petty larceny, and then we've got grand larceny, right? And I had more than met the threshold for the grand and the theft over. And I said, do you know what I'm facing if I go down there? Mike, this is a self-reliant situation or a God-reliant program. What are you going to do? You need to go down there and straighten it out. In Alcoholics Anonymous, God will do for us what we can't do for ourselves. And they sent me down there. And to this day, I still don't know why I listened to them. My friend Paul M. from Rockaway Beach, New York, always shares it. You know, everything that's ever helped me in AA has been against my better judgment, right? Like, no, I shouldn't do that, right? Yes, you should. Those old timers, they know, right? They know. So anyway, I sat down with a member of the Attorney General in Social Services and Housing, and I was 90 days sober, and I sat with them, and I said, it's all made up. The addresses, the landlords, the security deposits, it's all made up. I get goosebumps when I think about that. I said to them, I'm 90 days sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and in order for me to stay sober, I've got to be honest. And I put my arms in front of me, hook them up, I said. Hook them up. Right? And they conferred a moment with themselves. And they turned to me and said, it means more to us that you're 90 days clean and sober in AA. Don't worry about the fraud. We'll take care of it. And I was given perfect release from certain incarceration. And one would think, after being given perfect release from such a crazy situation, that I would walk over to the 12 steps and get into the program of recovery. I needed a relationship. I hear laughter in the rooms. That means identification. The horns in my head fit the holes in hers. It was just love at first sight. I tried. I knew what I was doing. You warned me, Mike, you've got this thing called codependency. I don't have this thing called codependency. You've got this thing called codependency. I know what I'm doing. You can't make me do those steps. Love will conquer all. Well, you all know how that turned out, don't you? You know, and I needed to go through that, right? I needed to go through that complete and total relationship breakdown and experience what untreated alcoholism looks like, feels like, and what that experience is like. You know, and you know, the old timers, you say, Mike, you can walk over to the steps or you can crawl. Just don't die. And I crawled. But I only crawled over to a couple of those steps. Because I have these internal resources, you know, my self-will, my intelligence backed by my willpower, don't you know? So yeah, I got into step one, you know, okay, powerless, all right. Okay, yeah. Step two, came to believe, yeah, okay, yeah. Lack of power, yeah, okay, sure. Okay, I'll invite that higher power over for coffee, yeah, come on over. God, creator, higher power. But when it got to that step four inventory, right, like, and I'll tell you, like, I pray that no one was as defiant as I was. Like, here's how sick I am. I was not even a year sober, refusing to do a step four inventory, and the head just wouldn't turn off. Like, just, like, nothing to kill the pain, racing around. And you know when the alcoholism hits, right? 2 a.m. Hi, what you doing? Right? You sleeping? I'm not. You know, and there's nothing to turn it off, right? And, you know, the night janitor at the North Shore Club, Newfie Bill was his name. Can I please come down, Newfie? My head won't turn off. Come on down, he'd say, you know. He saved my life. And here's what happened. He wrote the columns for my inventory. Beautiful columns, right? Beautiful columns. Sat across from him. He passed over the columns for me to complete. Here you go, Michael. Nope, you can't make me. You know, it got real bad, sober. It got real bad, and I know today that the key, one of the keys that keeps me in these rooms today is surrender, beyond surrender, beyond surrender. You know, and that's why for me it's a one day at a time program, right? I can't drive around. I don't stay clean off yesterday's shower. I can't drive around on last month's gas. I've got to continually take action to have that spiritual condition. And, you know, I finally got into, the pain was so unbearable, right? I got into that step four. I completed the step four inventory and, you know, slept like a baby. You know, the head was quieted for a time. Like, I thought, you know, it was a four-step program, right? You just stop your inventory. You stop at your inventory, right? And again, you know, that majesty of peace and serenity started to vanish because I wouldn't go through with the rest of the steps. And I'm so grateful that all throughout my sobriety, there have been absolute powerhouse beacons there to guide me and to remind me that this is a 12-step program and that each and every step is vital and that it's in order for a reason. And I'm challenged that if I'm having a problem with one step, I've got to go back to the step before. But this is all about engaging in this solution. And, you know, like, the whole theme, we are not a glum lot. Like, I was surrounded by members of Alcoholics Anonymous who absolutely insisted on enjoying life. Like, we have to have fun or the new person doesn't want it. And, you know, we would go to, my first sponsor, my sponsor number one, he had a 1970 Mustang Mach 1 fastback, and his instructions were, get in the car, man, and we would. And I didn't have any money, I didn't have nothing to pee in or nothing to throw it out of, nothing, right? He paid for everything, lock, stock, and barrel. We would go to different roundups all around, we would hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we would have fun in recovery. It's an absolute necessity. We have not sobered up to not be happy, joyous, and free and have a whole heck of a lot of fun here in AA. That's what life is about. It's about living it to the fullest. You know? It's by your example. You know, you didn't talk about it. You showed me. Right? This is a program of action, right? And, you know, like... I've experienced miracle after miracle after miracle here in the rooms of AA. I remember, I had been around for, you know, coming up a year or so, and they said, okay, Mike, you've been doing well. You're, you know, almost at your year. We think you're ready to volunteer. And I'm like, what? You mean like not getting paid volunteer? Because I got this mind that says money's going to solve it, right? I got to get in there. I got to... start an empire. Money's going to solve it, right? We think you're ready to volunteer. So as a result of listening to what you said, I volunteered at a local youth center. And as a result of what you said, just like when I'm setting up my home group, I'm showing up half an hour early. I'm arriving half, I'm staying half an hour late. I did the things that you told me to do. Yield the floor to the people who have been here for a while. Accept those, you know, understandings and accept the guidance. As a result of that, that volunteer job turned into a paid position. And I saw the stack of resumes, you know, master's of social work, bachelor's of psychology. Like, there were major people applying for this job. They gave me the job as a result of what you taught me to do. And then, then change happened, right? There was the person who hired me, they left. And, you know, in comes a new boss. And you know how alcoholics are with change. You know, you want to mess up an AA meeting, you know, change the seating in the room. Oh, my God, we've changed the seating in the room. God won't come to our meeting anymore. You know, like, change, right? And I could no more embrace change than you could. I'm like, oh, my God, how can this be? This person who hired me is gone, and now I've got this new person, and... you know, this new person said, you know, Mike, you seem to have a bit of an aptitude for this. You should apply to go to college. Me? College? And I went right back to the old timers, right? I'm not a college person. You know, I was voted most likely to get busted for possession in high school. With intent to distribute. You, Mike. Me? I can't do that. And it was those same old timers, right? That's your alcoholism talking, Mike. That's your alcoholism saying, no, you can't do it. That's your alcoholism saying, no, I want to get you alone so I can have my way with you. That's your alcoholism, Mike. My late sponsor, Milton, gave me a sticker to put on my mirror. The sticker says, you're now looking at the problem. Right? Applied, got in. So there I am. I'm doing my college certificate and my college diploma. Opportunity to go on to a degree. Same thinking. You don't need a degree. You can't do that. You know what the course load is? You can't do that, Mike. Same old timers. Apply. Applied. Got in. Got my degree. Opportunity to do a master's degree. Applied. Got in. Then I was approached by Walden out of the United States to do a PhD. So if I really wanted to, I could be Dr. Drunk. Because of you. Newcomers, if I can do it, anyone can do it. Because I'm hopeless. I'm beyond the beyond. But I'm just another common everyday miracle here in the rooms of AA. Because the people that have been here for a while know it. Miracles are dished out here daily. You know, and the biggest miracle is sitting in your chair right now. That's the biggest miracle. You know, and I still can go back to that crazy way of thinking. That degree and all that schooling led to an amazing job in the education system. You know, and I was able to transition out of that education position into what I'm doing now about property, like it's dealing with property and different kinds of things with property. And it's a life that it's not humanly possible, but it's another AA miracle. And I've seen that. I've seen miracle after miracle after miracle happen here in the rooms of AA. You know, and I'm a show me the money kind of person. Remember that Jerry Maguire? Show me the money. I want to see it, right? It's here. I remember gonna talk about Tommy. This was a guy who decided to go for a little drinky poo. And he decided to play bumper cars with the Vancouver police. And I don't know what it's like from where you come from, but the Vancouver police take extreme exception to them playing bumper cars with them. And they consider that attempted murder of a police officer with a weapon, the weapon being the car. And they boxed him in. And they ripped him out of his car by his hair. And they pistol whipped him bad. He was hospitalized. From that scene, he was in the hospital for a very long time. And then he was charged. There were 34 charges pressed upon him, from attempted murder of a police officer times 5, dangerous driving, assault, all. He was charged. And he was scared. Now, that might not have scared you, but that would scare me. He was charged, man, and it was heavy. He was looking at, you know, long, long time incarceration. And, you know, he came to me and he said those magic words, "Will you help me? Will you help me? Can I please have some help?" And those spiritual words right there saved my life, because there's never been no one in AA that's not helped me when I say, "Can you please help me?" I've never gone without a meal. I've never gone without a roundup ticket. I've never gone without a cigarette. In my first year of recovery, I must have bummed about 747,000 cigarettes. Nobody said no. You could smoke back in those days. Hey, you just sort of right after the other, right? And you still see somebody through the smoke. You know? Never gone. You can tell, I've never gone without a meal here. I've grown in recovery since I got here a little bit. No one's ever said no. I've never gone without since the day I walked in. I've never gone without since the day I walked in. And we surrounded this guy. Meetings, morning, noon, and night. Shifts, step groups, big book studies, conferences. Like, we took round-the-clock supervision. And you know, anyone that's ever had any court stuff, you know what it's like. As it gets closer to the date, right, you just start feeling it. We're coming out sideways. You know, I'm working intensely with this guy as his sponsor, right? And we're bringing in all the old-timers on a regular basis with their walkers, you know, just surrounding these guys, right? Just surrounding these guys and old-timers, you know. And then I had the employer from hell. They wouldn't let me go to court, you know. Like, I wanted to go to court with this guy. And I'm like, "Here's my medallion. Take my. And the old-timers, "Here's our medallions. Take our medallions. Go down there. We're in prayer with this guy. God's will be done. Please help us. Thy will be done," right? and 34 charges, the day of court, 34 charges were reduced down to one charge of driving without due care and attention. He got a $5,000 fine and he kept his license. It was a certified, notarized, bona fide miracle in AA. So we went drinking. That's what we thought. How? And you know those same old timers. Cunning, baffling, powerful. What's the next line? Without help, it is too much for us. Powerful, powerful lesson. He made it back alive, thankfully. And I want to welcome anybody in the room that's coming back. Welcome back to you if you are coming back. We want to walk with you. Welcome if you're coming back. I've been told over and over again that if I want to make my higher power laugh, I got to tell him my plans. And I've had a chance to go to lots of conferences just like this. And what I love doing is the unsuspected blessings that come from exploring the area in which I am in. And I want to encourage every single one of you to explore the AA here in Puerto Vallarta. It's amazing. I want to give a round of applause for the AA in Puerto Vallarta. I want you to make I lost my place. My name is Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank the committee. I was in a town much like this, and I was encouraged. I was invited to a 20-year cake, and you know, I learned very early where there's cake, there's sandwiches. I'm going, right? And all over I go to the 20-year cake, and it was just powerful, powerful AA. This lady got up there and shared her story. And it hit me so hard about surrendering with her sponsor. She was thinking that she could never get a job. She came from a very rough background and could never get a job. There's no way I'm ever going to get a job. Never going to amount to anything. I might be sober, maybe, but I'm not going to get something, right? And the sponsor said, you know what, we go through these steps, we trust God, we clean house, we help others. We practice this program to the best of our ability. We try to be a maximum service to others, and we don't let up. And that's the advice that she followed, and she went down the path of social work. And she, too, was able to get in there, do some volunteering, get a job as a social worker in her community. And it was her dream job, and she couldn't believe it. The sponsor said, just another common everyday miracle here in AA, but she sat there as a social worker, and she worked with a very rough section of town, and it was a section of town that reminded her of how she grew up, and she remembers, you know, like in that kind of career, there's things that stand out, and she remembers this one kid, and her job was child protection, going in to protect kids in crazy situations. She remembers this one kid. It was like the fifth time this little kid, who was like four, was in her office. Fifth time they were offering protection and social and emergency transition housing and emergency placement. And this kid looked so sad. He looked down at his teddy bear. He looked up at her and he said, I wish you were my mom. And it just melted her. Because her sponsor said that she'd never, ever get a job, much less a... Her sponsor said that if she listened to herself, that she would never get that job. But if she embraced Alcoholics Anonymous, if she really leaned into it, that anything and everything is possible. And her heart just broke because she knew that she could not be this little kid's mom. And it's like, wow. And she was lonely. There was problems with intimacy. And I've gone through problems of intimacy myself, right? I had to go through my own codependency and my adult child of alcoholic stuff. I had to look at the abandonment stuff, and I had to surrender my defects of character, how I act in relationship and in intimacy. It's very important that I don't lose focus of being in a healthy relationship and being, you know, centered with a higher power, being centered in recovery and treating my partner as a rare and precious gift from God. It's very important. And this woman who was taking her cake shared about how she struggled so much with intimacy, and she thought she was never going to find a partner. She saw all these partners around her, everybody holding hands and everybody, you know, getting married and having kids and families and all this kind of stuff. She said to her sponsor, it's never going to happen for me. And that sponsor said the same thing about the relationship stuff that she did with the career stuff. Trust God, clean house, help others. We're going to go through another set of steps. We're going to get down. We're going to look at this intimacy stuff. We're going to look at these fears. We're going to look at this crazy sex conduct. We're going to look at all this stuff in a context of being happy, joyous, and free, and able to participate fully in a relationship. And sure enough, she met a man. And this man wasn't in sobriety, you know, but he wanted what she had. I hear laughter in the room. That means identification. I like that. Yeah, you're not having fun until you get a U-Haul 30 days in, right? No. She met a man. And, oh, I think I got some feedback here. Webmaster to the rescue. Just like her sponsor said, she met someone she was supposed to meet. And they fell in love. Deep love. Hello? Oh, I lost my place again. My name's Mike. I'm an alcoholic. I'll start it all over again. So they fell deeply in love, but she had really embraced AA, and she couldn't be with a partner that didn't have that spiritual compatibility with her. And he really wanted to be with her. And he joined her journey in the 12 steps. This was all done with her sponsor. And the man had some very disturbing stuff that happened in his own family, in his upbringing. He had been married before. And he really wanted things to work out. He wanted things to work out between the two of them. And he was scared to talk about what had happened in his past because he was in a previous marriage and there was a lot of discord. There was a major divorce separation and he hadn't seen his kids in years. So she agreed to work with them, and when it came time, and she insisted that they try and have a relationship with those kids. And when it came time for the family to reunite, for the father to see his kids for a long time, and they all reunited, and it turns out the same 5-year-old that had been sitting in her office wanting her to be his mom was one of his kids. And she ended up adopting that 5-year-old. And he could call her mom legally. And it's stuff like that that keeps me coming back to the rooms of AA. That the miracle is alive and well here. If I stay close to him and perform his work well. AA is not a spectator sport. I've got to get in the game. My sponsor told me that if I'm not working intensely with the still suffering alcoholic, I am the still suffering alcoholic. The only way I can keep what I have is by giving it away. You know, and it's been proven time after time after time that I only coast one way in AA, and that's downhill. And I want to tell you, 30 years in, I still get it wrong. 30 years in, I still get it wrong. I'm not going to stand up here and tell you, like, oh, everything's perfect. Look at this beautiful everything. It's all perfect. I still get it wrong. I'm in the meeting the other day, and there's not one mention of a God, a higher power. There's not one mention of the 12 steps. There's not one mention of sponsorship. And I'm just like pulling my hair out. Well, the hair that I have left. And I said, well, look, what are the newcomers going to grab onto? Like I got sponsees on speed dial. We're going to hostily take over the business meeting. There's going to be minimum requirements to share. We're going to change the coffee, get the herbal tea that my partner loves. And we're going to, you know, just generally royally make this, turn this message into recovery-focused meeting. And it was all drunkalogue, the whole meeting. I got drunk this, and I got drunk that, and I did this, and I did that. Fuming. The whole meeting, I didn't hear one thing. I was too mad. We pray. God grant us the serenity. Right? Close the meeting. And there's the three newcomers huddled together. Oh my God, I'm an alcoholic. Oh my God, I am too. Oh my God, I am too. We found a place. We're home. Whew. Couldn't see that a mile away. You know? Message was not for me. But it is exactly what those newcomers needed to hear. Right? There's other times, I was at a meeting. This was even more recent than that. And you know, you got that crazy guy chairing the meeting, right? You know that crazy guy, the one that you wonder, what is that guy? Does that guy even have a sponsor? What's going on? Like, I'm judging them left and right. Just judging him left and right. You know, and he, of course, who do the crazy people speak? Who do the crazy people pick to share? All the crazy people, right? So we have a crazy meeting, right? Crazy, crazy, crazy. Forgetting that my sponsor told me that, you know, everyone that's at a meeting, everyone's asked to share, is exactly how it's supposed to go down, right? Let it go. Don't play God. Let go and let God, right? So after the meeting, I'm just in absolute judgment. Oh, my gosh, what a meeting. And I'm just judging the chair, and then I get a call from the chair. Hi, Mike. Will you please hear my step five? Completely got it wrong. In my own little agenda, right? Big lessons in gossip. Big lessons in gossip. Like, can you believe that he ran off with her? Can you believe that she's married? He ran off with a marriage. They were friends, and he ran off with a guy's wife. Can you believe that? Can't believe they did that. You know? And then I get a call. Mike, will you please sponsor me? I ran off with my friend's wife. I need help. And I realized, right? Anything I judge, I end up sponsoring. And it is my direct divine task to love and bring to bear these principles of recovery. When they say in the book, resign from the debating committee, I hereby tender my resignation. You know, I want to share that there's still a lot of stuff that goes on that keeps me in need of Alcoholics Anonymous. The very breath I breathe tonight is because of my sobriety. When that beautiful little girl was born, remember I told you there was a girl that was pregnant? That beautiful girl was born. And I got to be a parent for 14 years. 13 years, 10 months. And there was some tragedy. There was some stuff pulled by family. And it was very hard to deal with. And the old timers and the people in AA are absolutely right. I have to look, and I had to look at my own part. Where was I at fault? Where did I set the ball rolling? What role did I play? Where was I at fault? And it was extremely difficult to do that. And the people who had interfered didn't let up. They didn't let up in their interference. And I had to disengage. And it was tragic. It was tragic. And I experienced judgment in the rooms of AA. What kind of family member are you? What do you mean you did that? And I went, oh my God, I gotta look at this over again. You know, maybe everyone, you know, maybe you guys are right. And so I did. And I ended up in the rooms of Al-Anon. Guess how many Al-Anon meetings I had to go to before I heard the story that was going on? One. Guess how many speakers I had to hear before I heard my story? Two. And the reason I share that is, for number one, God bless all of the Al-Anon people in the room. Al-Anon people, we love you. I am a double winner, and I know for certain that there are alcoholics who are alive because of you. God bless you, people in Al-Anon. And the other reason I mention that is, you know, sometimes we need to broaden our horizons to get that support. And I want to encourage you, if you need to broaden your, keep seeking that support. And I'm not saying look for co-signers of your crap, because I can do that. I am a case builder. I will search. If there's a co-signer in the room, if there's someone who will join me and co-sign and case build, I'll find you, right? I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about genuinely seeking understanding about the situation. And I've sat in rooms with people who have gone exactly through the situation that I'm going through and worse situations. So I feel very at home in a room of Al-Anon. I used to think that a meeting of Al-Anon was going in behind enemy lines. Not now. Best Kleenex in the city. You know? So God bless you all in Al-Anon. And, you know, I just want to send a very special prayer because Kirsten is not doing so well. Sometimes it's very challenging when you have some sobriety because you can see how it's going to play out, right? And it's not going well. And you guys all know the craziness that goes with being on the street. And you guys all know what it takes. You know, these are the most expensive seats in the world to get. But there's only one way we get them, and that's if we reach out for help. Everyone's got to go through their own process. And I pray that God's will be done in her life. That the people that were put, like were put in my life, are placed in hers, and that everything lines up for sobriety to happen. Newcomers, it's all lined up for sobriety to happen. You're 12 steps away from a brand new life, and I know that for certain. I want to close with, there's absolutely no limit to what can be accomplished here. There's no limit to the depth. There's no limit to the beauty of the journey. But again, there's only one way we keep it, and it's by giving it away. So again, I want to thank the committee. I want to say, if you came here with something tonight, I pray that you keep it by giving it away. And if you came here looking for something tonight, I pray that you find it by joining us here in AA. Thank you for my sobriety.